Hi there, and welcome to the Be Your Own Healer Telesummit. I'm Jonathan Fitzgordon, creator of the Core Walking Program and host of this summit, Be Your Own Healer. Today, I'll be talking with Kate Stillman, entrepreneur, Ayurvedic practitioner, and certified yoga teacher with a worldwide vision for community wellness education. Kate created and has grown YogaHealer.com steadily since 2001 into a vibrant worldwide online posse of yoga practitioners who want to practice personal and community wellness. Kate is a graduate of California College of Ayurveda in 2001, certified as a clinical Ayurvedic specialist. Kate is also a certified yoga teacher with numerous trainings and certifications under her belt. Kate also guides hundreds of people wanting to have a wellness breakthrough in her October and April yoga detox courses. Kate teaches you how to wake up your wellness potential and up-level your daily habits. Kate is a master of getting your diet and habits on track to feel younger as you get older. I'm thrilled to have Kate as the only Ayurvedic practitioner participating in the Be Your Own Healer Telesummit, and I'm very excited to hear her perspective on the subject. So, Kate, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, you bet, Jonathan. My pleasure.
All right. So what does the phrase Be Your Own Healer mean to you? Why is it important for people to heal themselves?
Well, I mean, I think basically we all eventually come up to that we have to take charge of ourselves. We have to invent ourselves in that daily process, it's up to us. I mean, the responsibility or the ability to respond ultimately lies in our own hands, and no one can really do the work for us. So as much as we might want to hire others for guidance, for accountability, for even for body work, even for, you know, actually shifting the fabric of our physiology, ultimately at the end of the day, us and how we make our decisions and the little tiny decisions we make throughout the day that ultimately will determine whether we're healthy or whether we're unhealthy, to a large extent.
And how has your personal history informed your approach to this and to working with people?
Well, my personal history, I mean, how I came into being a wellness practitioner and yoga teacher was actually usually a different road than a lot of people came in. I came in through international environmental politics. I was involved in climate change, global warming politics as a teen and then through college and as a young adult. And I was kind of coming through the place of how do we get humans to be more conscious? How do we get humans to really wake up and start to realize that the planet is their physiology? And so when I came in through that way, I was basically looking at different systems of medicine. I was looking at Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, different medicines from different healing traditions, mostly from the East, Tibetan medicine. And I was looking for the one that basically helped humans really connect to the planet, you know, like heal yourself, heal the planet. And so for me, that was my road into up-leveling my own physiology, to waking up my own subtle anatomy.
And, you know, I started this stuff for myself as an adult. I was 32 when I started doing yoga, and I didn't see it at all coming, the kind of work I'm doing now when I was younger. What did you want to do when you were a really little kid? What did you want to be when you grew up?
You know, I don't think it was that clear. I was definitely interested in wellness for a long time. I was definitely interested in helping other people in wellness, but I couldn't really pinpoint it. And I think to a large degree, because it's like I was brought up pretty traditional East Coast, like you're supposed to say like a fireman or a nurse or a teacher or a doctor. And I never latched on to any of that. And I'm sort of grateful for that, because I never kind of got stuck in the I'm supposed to be something. so I've been able to keep inventing what it is that I want to be or that I am. I don't really have that strong of a thing of like I really wanted to help. I just didn't get why things are so disconnected. I think that was something that to me was so confusing, because there wasn't any spirituality in my household. There wasn't really much mind-body awareness. There was fitness, for sure, which I'm so grateful for, that my parents were both very fit, active, athletic people. So it was just part of our family culture. But other than that, I don't think it wasn't that clear. I just didn't get why things were so disconnected. And that was, I think, pretty frustrating as a child.
That's really interesting. And I mean, for a lot of people, we get that idea of, you know, firemen, policemen from our parents. So it seems like your parents, they not necessarily in a spiritual mold, but they gave you the space to figure out what you wanted to do for yourself. Does that make sense?
I think it does. And I think, too, being female really helped. I think my parents, and from what they've told me, they basically just wanted me to marry a nice Jewish guy when I grew up. But my mom was Catholic. She's an excommunicated Catholic. And my dad was Jewish. So my mom, she had married a nice Jewish guy. So she was all for that. And my dad was, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. But the problem is I grew up in a really WASPy area where there weren't any, you know, there were very, very few, like I'm say like 2% of the kids in my high school were Jewish. So, and the same thing at college as well. So I never really came into much contact with these nice Jewish guys I was supposed to marry. So you know what I mean? Like, I think being female, my dad and I have talked about this extensively, especially as my business entrepreneurship has sort of taken off, is like, how was I more sort of free out of the box from trying to like be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, where I felt like I had to conform. And he says, well, you know, I just didn't really care what you were as long as you married a nice Jewish guy. Never happened.
Oh, that's so great. I have an 8-year-old daughter. I have a 6-year-old son and an 8-year-old daughter. And it's an amazing, you can't control it. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is I'm trying to give her in terms of the freedom to become, to figuring out who she is. And it's an amazing process.
I work a lot with, in my Ayurvedic practice, I work mostly with yoga teachers who are, in my experience, you know, very much community wellness leaders, whether they articulate that or not. And they're mostly working with women who are usually mothers. And so within that, you know, within that structure, it's like if we can really wake up to that, we wake up with our kids to that, like, hey, we don't know who you are. We don't know what you're going to be. And like, we don't even know what this body is. Like, we don't even know what we're capable of. Like, let's check this out. You know, let's explore.
Totally. Yeah, it's amazing. Like, my kids are in public school, and it's just, there's an interesting battle of like, what a school wants of you in terms of, you know, conforming, and then what your parents might want from you in terms of freedom. And that process is amazing. Do you identify yourself as something? Like, how do you feel about that? Are you a teacher, or are you a healer, or a guide?
Yeah, I mean, right now, in terms of, like, I don't really do much work one-on-one with people in the Ayurvedic, under, like, the auspices of doing like, Ayurvedic work or yoga work. I mean, I'm more or less I'm a thought leader above all else, and an entrepreneur in the wellness industry. That's sort of where I'm coming from. I'm definitely, I build supportive communities for people to learn and grow and really explore their physiology and wake up to the next level in terms of their purpose and passion. And it's well grounded in yoga and Ayurveda, and integral enlightenment and a bunch of other things. But it's hard to, like, I'm not doing that much, you know, client work right now, one-on-one. I mean, I do actually a lot more business coaching with yoga teachers and wellness providers to help them help their clients and students and patients. So, you know, I don't know if that's helpful, but.
That's totally helpful. Like, because I know that one of the things you offer are programs for yoga teachers to get their business house in order. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I help them increase income and impact. So it's all based on that.
And my wife and I were just having this conversation a couple of minutes ago, actually, about, do you think that the entrepreneurial spirit is a healing practice? Like, the idea of becoming an entrepreneur or being an entrepreneur is healing in and of itself?
Totally. I mean, to me, it's like the next stage of freedom. I mean, once a yoga teacher or a healer really wakes up and really starts to like say, like, how can I be useful? Like, how can I be uniquely useful? Like, what am I doing that's so damn good?
<You know? laughs>
It's so useful to other people. And then, you know, and my husband and I were talking about this morning, how it's like, at some point you need to construct the box and be like, I'm a yoga teacher and I get the system, or I'm a Ayurvedic practitioner and I understand, you know, X, Y, and Z, and I can, you know, I can diagnose and prescribe, and I get good at that and good at that and good at that. And then once you've got the box, then it's time to take the box apart, right? And that's what yoga always does that. Yoga's always in pulsation between the known and the unknown. So when we start to do that in our career and say, like, okay, I know I can do this, but then what's the unknown? What's trying to happen next? And we start to deconstruct the box and say, like, what's really super useful right now? And how can I mix some of what I do here with some of what I do there and some of what I do here and really create, you know, a signature system or a program that's really perfect for the kind of clients that are naturally coming to me, but I want to work with them at a much deeper commitment, at a much deeper level, through a much, you know, more deeper transformation. And when we start to do that, something else happens that couldn't have happened if we were like, I'm a yoga teacher and I teach public class on Friday nights at 6 o'clock at the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I always wonder, like, cause you wear more than one hat and you think, it's obviously fine for you to have a lot of recommendations within your purview, right? Like, you're going to include movement, you're going to include yoga, and you're going to include lifestyle and vitamins and stuff like that. Is that correct?
Well, what are we talking about?
When you're
with a client,
or even in what you're, let's say, in your in your programs, you're teaching people to be more expansive than just be a yoga teacher or just be an Ayurvedic practitioner. Does that resonate?
Well, let's take, as if we ground it in, like, say, like in the Living Ayurveda course, I'm teaching people how to take the gigantic field of wisdom of Ayurveda in its depth and apply it to a postmodern life. That's like busy with, like, jobs and kids and food preparation and, you know, cosmic consciousness and, you know, like all these things that are going on and, like, increased information age, you know, full blast. Like, how do we take this ancient wisdom tradition, make it super, super practical? So are we going to talk about, like, vitamins? At some point, someone's going to ask some vitamin questions, of course. Like,
right.
At some point, someone's going to be like, hey, exactly how do you use the spices in your kitchen? And then we're going to talk about meditation and we're going to say, like, okay, half of the people in that course are yoga teachers. So we're going to quickly talk about, like, how do you bring this stuff into the yoga studio? So, yeah, I mean, there's it's a pretty broad span. But Ayurveda, I mean, just by definition, right, the science of life, I mean, it's a pretty much, like, you know, there's no holds barred, right? It's just like,
right.
you can talk about anything under the auspices of Ayurveda. I mean, the same is true of yoga, right, the path of enlightenment, the path of, like, uniting the material with the immaterial. Like, it's a pretty broad scope here.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely.
And then you tie into that a connection economy and a global economy with all the business stuff, and it's like, yeah, I feel like it's an open field right now.
No question. You know, everyone, as it's turning out, I'm talking with just a large number of entrepreneurs, and it's been an amazing experience. To get everyone's take on this, and this the nature of entrepreneurship and healing, which is really, it's really great. You know, and I love body work, and I love healing modalities of all kinds, but I think, like, you know, each thing is just one piece of the puzzle. So for the individual, how much responsibility does the individual have when it comes to, you know, healing or getting fixed?
Well, I don't know. I don't really have any idea. I mean, it's like in what situation, right? Like, what's really going on? In my experience, I've had some great. I had this problem. I'm a sort of an aggressive athlete. Like, I in Mexico, we stand up paddleboard into big waves. And we surf these big waves, and sometimes there's, like, you know, there's rocks involved and other people, and it's like moving water, and it's intense, and so injuries happen at times, and I mountain bike, and there's like, you know, moving quickly on these wheels over dirt and rocks between trees, you know, and so injuries happen. So I've had some injuries that I've tried to really fix myself with therapeutic yoga and haven't been able to really get in there. So I've gone to a number of, you know, body workers, chiropractors, et cetera. And I've had great luck, like, totally shifting this crap in my neck from repeated mountain bike crashes. So, you know, it's like, I don't know. And yet at the end of the day, I know that my most effective mode of healing is merging awareness with my physiology. I'm just, like, moving consciousness deeper and deeper into my physiology, whether that's accompanied by breath or movement, is icing on the cake. But just that like how we direct our awareness is so crucial to healing and health. And I mean, I think from the number of people that you've probably talked to, and from your yoga capacity, it's like we know that there's different levels of capacity there. And so for a beginner, they're not, if they don't have much consciousness in the fabric of their physiology, it's gonna take a while. But for someone who's done a lot of yoga and pranayama and meditation, asana, all that, it's like you're used to bringing your consciousness into different levels of depth and also into span, right? Being able to like pulse awareness through all your cells and then like to a center, whether that's your heart or your gut or your third eye, you know, it's that there's, we have these different capacities that we've developed. And as far as I can tell, the increased sensitivity that comes with really being able to become facile with consciousness in our cells, it has a lot to do with how much health and vitality and really just how much we actually are able to experience. It's like, you know, the worlds that open up because we're able to experience more and more and more and more.
I feel like one of the things that I'm selling or offering to people is the, trying to give people the belief that they can change so that they can open up more and more, they can experience these things. And sometimes, you know, I feel like I'm a cheerleader, you know, like my job is to believe in them when they have doubts. How much would you say, like, is cheerleading involved with what you do? Are you, like, working with people in that respect? Are you just trying to get them to get past their doubts and things like that?
Yeah, that's such a great part. In my yoga health coaching certification program, which I coach yoga teachers into becoming health coaches for their students so they can take some of the other practices of Ayurveda, to take some of the off-the-mat practices and bring them into their lives. And we talk about this a lot, about how it's like you're – like the information's now free. So it's like as far as like how much information are we using to help people, that's kind of – you know, this is information's out there, but how much do we need accountability? You know, how much do we need guidance? Like these are things that, and what you're saying too, besides guidance and accountability, there's this whole other thing of support. And how much, and then is support, if we look at support, it's like, yeah, cheerleading's part of support. But there's also this, another part of support is saying like, hey, look where you were. And look where we're going, and look where we are now. Like let's just get a little bit, you know, expand consciousness into time more, and see this as a, that we're all continually inventing ourselves. That we are actually transformation in action, and just getting like situated. Okay, this is how we're showing up right now at this point in time. That perspective, right? So much of holding perspective for someone else is huge. I mean, and then the other part of it that I find that really accelerates the wellness journey is being in a group that has the same assumptions. And that could be part of cheerleading too. Like when a whole group holds the energy of like, that's where we were, this is where we're going, these are our assumptions, this is how we're getting there. And maybe the assumption too is like, we'll try anything that works, you know, like we'll try anything and see if it works, right? Like that's a great assumption. Not a lot of groups have that assumption, but if your group has that assumption and someone comes in with like, hey, check this out. Like, how's this going to work? And my husband and I just started doing some different like cross fitness workouts on our balcony because the swell's a little low. There's not many waves to surf right now. We're like, we need something new. So we started doing this and it's like, hey, this is working, you know? And so like, that's part of our family assumption. Having that shared assumption, the amount of cheerleading that happens from when we share assumptions and language and a sense of like, hey, this is cool now and that's not cool anymore, you know, like that to me is it, that culture, that shared culture that's created can absolutely accelerate all of the members that are part of that group that's holding that, you know, that's holding that culture.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot for me is about the ability to not succeed sometimes. You know, failure is my friend is one of my favorite things. And I kind of feel like if you can cultivate that in a group, it's a lot easier than processing that by yourself.
Yeah, totally. 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 I love it. I mean, and that's to me, too, if we go back to the entrepreneurship part of it, like that's one of the most fun things of like, I mean, the only way you're going to find out what works is by what didn't work. And the same thing's true, like in Ayurveda with, like one of my teachers was really clear when we started going into internship and after we did our, you know, sort of academic study, and we went into practicing on other people and giving them recommendations. And they would always say, you know, it's like whatever happens at your next meeting and you find out like what worked and what didn't work is, you know, going to give you so much more information about the root cause or what's really going on behind the scenes. And I really took that to heart. I was like, wow, that's so true. Because if, you know, one of the assumptions in Ayurveda is that we live in our physiology in duality, so that there's these opposites everywhere. So if you give someone a warming diet because you thought they had a cooler, you know, say you thought they had like cooler digestion and you gave them a warming diet and all of a sudden there's like inflammation everywhere. It's like you can assume your original assumption was wrong. You know, that's
right.
Helpful knowing what's really going on. So instead of being like all bummed of like, oh, I can't help this person. It's like, wow, we just got so much more information. Right. And now we can make an even better, we can take the next stab at it. And I think if we don't have this, if we don't have an attitude like that, we're just living in just a much smaller universe. We've just constructed a lot of limitations for ourselves.
Right, right, which gets back. It's always about the willingness, the openness to accepting change. You know, pain, most of my work is with pain. I work with a lot of lower back pain, knee pain, hip pain. And, you know, for me, pain is just often an indicator something is wrong. It can be a signal that finally actually makes people make changes. In terms of you, you know, you mentioned, like, your athletic spills. How much has your pain, either physical or even emotional, led you to seek out the healers that you've looked for and to want to heal yourself?
I think, you know, for me, it's come... Because I really came into yoga more from an athletic place in my body. So I wasn't really looking – I wasn't even looking – even though I was tighter than hell, I was not looking for flexibility. My pain – I've had spiritual pain, I'd say. It's like just from having that abyss in my life, just from having – you know, being a fairly intelligent person, being funneled through a fairly intelligent, aggressive education system – you know, at a pretty high level and just never running into spirituality, I think there's that disconnect of just like, why aren't people talking about the bigger problems here? Even in college, I was in college in the early 90s and talking, you know, trying to get some real answers between the economics department and the biology department and the geology department on global environmental issues. It was so new at the time. They didn't have an established program. They do now at most liberal arts schools, but they didn't have that. That was so painful to me of like, why are we talking about these like really microeconomic issues instead of these macro, really macro issues? Why as a, you know, paying gazillions of dollars into our, you know, into our college educations and a typical college student isn't being raised with a true planetary awareness of what's actually happening on their planet and not really being raised or being taught how to take care of their own physiology. To me, what we were being taught was so disconnected from what was needed right now, and that was so painful. I mean, to me, that's where the pain was. I don't think I would have articulated this pain because actually it comes through more as numbness, you know, and so I tried to figure that out through a lot of, you know, how do I get deeper connections, and I experimented with a lot of illegal substances to have deeper connections, and that was super fun, you know, but at some point it was like, okay, that's not a sustained consciousness shift. Where are people having sustained consciousness shifts? And I ran way more into Eastern thought from that alley.
Right, and you're talking about psychic pain, which I really love, right? There's the context of the physical pain and the psychic pain, which is sometimes so much more intense because you don't see it, you don't feel it. You know it's there in an amorphous kind of way. Does healing have to be painful, or is there a value to pain?
I think it's just sensation, right? So it's like all the different sensations are giving different information. And there's so it's in like what it's like in what context my sense is like that information that pain often gives us that, I mean, sometimes it's that something's out of alignment, but sometimes it's not. Because if someone you love dies, it's like this, what's out of alignment that, like, you know, that we're mortal, right? It's, there's some things that we just can't change. So to say that, like, there's always something wrong when there's pain, to me, that doesn't make that much sense either. But in terms of just, like, body stuff, like, I have this thing going on in my left shoulder right now, and part of it is because of spending too much time paddling, and some things must be a little out of alignment. It could be the size of my paddle's a little too big for my height, stature, and strength right now. It could be that my paddle's a little too long. It could be that the way that I'm holding the paddles off. It could be the way that the way my feet are planted when I'm turning my hips trying to catch a wave is a little bit off. I mean, there's something off. I'm clear, you know, just from having had pain and equipment issues with, you know, bikes and boards and different types of equipment that I like to ride. And knowing that something can be shifted, and knowing that, like, okay, too, because of having a lot of yoga therapy experience, I can get on my mat and come back to neutral. Why I'm re-injuring it, though, like, I need to start seeing this. I have plans when I get back to the United States to really work with a few specialists, get a few different opinions, see what's happening so that I don't deteriorate my left shoulder in pursuit of catching waves.
Right. How long has that been going on?
The shoulder thing? Well,
yeah.
It's an old one because it goes back to carrying a backpack. I used
right.
to carry my backpack, and it was before, you know, it's like our generation, right? We're way before the iPad. We're way before that. We had these,
right.
these huge freaking textbooks around. And I was a smart kid, and I had all these textbooks, and I always did my homework, and I always carried it on my left shoulder. So I've done a ton of work to, like, reconstruct, but it's my Achilles heel.
You know, it's. I mean, I feel like that. It's clear to me that's what you do with yourself, right? You're being a detective of your own pain, and you just literally laid out a half a dozen, you know, reasons or origins of why you're suffering this. And I feel like that's so much of what I'm doing with my clients as well as myself. How much of that would you say is involved in your practice in terms of helping people find out what the root of the problem is or leading them in that direction?
Yeah, I think it's all about, I mean, I really do. Like, there's so much about that. There's very few things that someone else can actually do for us, I think, for, like, real long-term solutions, whether that's in our business or whether that's in our body. You know, I see that all the time, even with, like, in business stuff, like, if I just hire the best web designer, it's like, nope, you're still going to, even if you have the best website, you know, you're still going to, if you don't really know how to connect with your clients and really find out where they're actually trying to go and what they're actually trying to do, like, you're still going to have a massive business problem. And so it is that detective work, and it's so much, I mean, everything, I think, right now with, you know, with the connection economy and with the explosive, you know, explosion of just more of consciousness, of people becoming more and more conscious individually and collectively, is how much we get that it's all about connection. So when we start to really connect, it's like, okay, I got to connect with myself. I got to figure this out. Like, I got to align. In yoga, we use, you know, we got to align these five koshas, right? We got to get the physical, the breath body, the mind body, the intuitive body, the bliss body. Like, we got to align that. How often? Daily. Like, for how long? Till we die, right? That's an assumption that in Ayurveda and yoga, we hold that assumption. And so that sense of, like, we have to connect all five bodies. We got to get the channels flowing. We got to get the conversation happening in all five of those bodies every single day for the rest of our life. That's a baseline. That's to get to neutral, right? And that same thing that when we're working with a client, it's like taking responsibility for what we can be and stepping into the seat of, like, being our own, you know, being our own healer. It's all going to come down to no one else can align those five bodies for you. They can teach you how to get in there and ask the right questions and open some gateways and whatnot. They can give you a peak experience where you have the sensation of, like, oh, my gosh, this is what it's like when all five bodies are talking. This is really cool. And then it's, like, gone. can you give back? And then can you take it to another level of depth?
You know, one issue for people who do this kind of work is how they process the energy of their clients. Like, do you take on the suffering of others in your work? Or, you know, how do you protect yourself from taking on too much?
That's a good question. I'm laughing because it's like I plead immunity. And I have some serious practices. Like when I'm talking about like five body practices, like there's things that I never a day does not go by when I do not get exercise ever.
Huh.
Ever. You know, like I never, and it seems almost true for meditation. Like it's just, there's these things that I do that clear that, you know, if there's anything in the way, it's cleared. I love the work. Are you familiar with the work of Thomas Hubbel, H-U-B-L, the German enlightened dude?
H-U-B-L?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I just want to point, like, any healers and yoga teachers and people who are feel like they do take on other people's energy to really listen to his take on it, because it really shifted my experience of it, which is, like, the only time that something gets stuck is when we're not really paying attention to what's happening. And it's a massive shift for a lot of people. I know it was for me, but I after that, I feel like I haven't really taken anything on. Now, as far as impact goes, because that's where I'm much more concerned, spend a lot more of my time, is like, how can I have, you know, the biggest possible, best possible impact with my life? Because I've always felt that I've been gifted. This is something that goes way back. Like, I've always felt privileged and gifted, because I have been privileged and grew up with that. You know, like I said, my parents' biggest concern was that I marry a nice Jewish guy. Like, they weren't worried about, like, me having, like, enough food or being educated enough or any of that. Like, I've always been blessed with opportunity and with great teachers. And so it's like, what could I possibly do with that? How can I take more on is actually my question. Because I know how to build my ojas in Ayurveda. We use that word to describe, like, the deeper integrity of our immune field. Like, I know how to do that. So I do that. And then it's like, how big does this get? How big can I be? Like, how much can I do? Not for the sake of Kate Stillman, but just for the sake of, like, consciousness, being able, having technology. I now have a team, you know, at Yoga Healer. I have, like, all these people that do all this stuff that's in promotion of my assumptions that, you know, more and more people should experience global consciousness, more and more people should experience their inner and outer ecosystem is connected and start to work to become even more interconnected that way. You know, just like some very basic assumptions that I have that I want to see gain more traction than I'm currently seeing. So I don't really focus it much more on, like, oh, poor little Kate who talked to someone who was sick or someone who can't get their business act together. And I mean, to me, that just doesn't register at all.
So, and this isn't to push the point, but I find for a lot of people in the healing professions, though, it's easy to develop a tendency to not take care of themselves because they're so focused on others. Is that an issue for you or?
No.
Great.
No. Because, if for anyone that it's an issue for, like, clean up your closet. Like, come on. Like, who are you kidding? Right? Like, it's stupid. And it's unsustainable. And it's not, you're not helping. Because whatever that is you're teaching is just part of some old shadow experience that's coming from an unrealized place. But we haven't really stepped into the self. Because if you step fully into the self, you take care of the self. Because you get that it's the ground from which anything else, anything more creative, anything more healing can actually come from. So, I mean, and it's strict around, like, we are lights out at 10 p.m. You know, like, we get 8 hours of sleep a night. There's no messing with certain things. There's no messing with meditation, with pranayama. There's no messing with exercise. you know, strength, flexibility, and strength and flexibility practices, like practices that harden, practices that soften. There's baselines, you know, and that we live this, that we model this for our children, that we model this for our clients. My experience, like if you're giving someone a peak experience of an open physiology through body work and you're working with 10 people a day and you're not taking care of your own, you're not actually teaching them how to maintain it. So what is the point?
Great. Yeah, it's all about that. That's like really honest transference. This story has been coming up a bunch in these interviews, is that I was working with a healer who was working on me recently, and she was doing something called LMT work and really great stuff. And she just basically was having her hands on my organs. And I just, in my, you know, sort of flip way, said, you know, I think I'm pretty good at not being too attached to what my clients are doing. I don't take on their stuff. And she just looked at me. She goes, yes, you do. You know, and she just felt like that was a large part of what I'm working through. And the mm-hmm. illusion I might have that I'm not taking on their stuff when, in fact, you know, I am. You know, one of the things that motivates me, that motivates people when they're doing this
you
work.
You know, wait. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe not.
You know, it's funny. That's a great, yeah.
And this is another thing, is it's like, again, like, what are your assumptions? What are the assumptions of the person doing body work on you? Are those the same? Do those match up? And do you want them to, or is there a way for us to hold a more expanded assumption? I feel like there's a massive shadow in, I mean, there's a lot of massive shadows in the yoga community. There's a lot of other massive shadows in the body work community. And this is a problem in the body work community. This is seen as a problem. I don't see it as a problem. And I've done a ton of body work. I've done panchakarma with a number of people, deep panchakarma. It's deep body work. It's like catharsis. It's detox, catharsis work. Where you're just trying to bring up toxins and get them out. And it,
right.
You know, and I still hold the same attitude, as it's like, if you allow the energy to simply move and do what the energy is trying to do, which is to move and change and transform, then it doesn't have to be this big problem. You know, in the yoga community, there's a lot of shadow around money and self-worth and work in the world. And there's just like a lot of issues around people actually making money and talking about making money and having financial goals and cleaning up their financial act. And to me, I see both of these as very similar shadow issues. And the sense of that, you know, until you deal with them, they will very much limit your experience, whether it's on impact or whether it's on income.
Totally. I do anatomy for yoga teacher trainings in New York for a few different studios, and the whole money piece and the business piece and even the idea of why I'm taking a teacher training and do I want to be a yoga teacher, and just the nature of how much work it takes inside and outside to make that happen. I'm not sure people are really aware of what they're entering into when they take on the idea that this is what they want to do.
Hmm. Yeah.
What do you expect of your clients? Like, how interested are you in their success? Like, when you take people on or they're in your program, like, how involved are you in terms of that emotionally?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I think is really important is setting up a price point in a sales process high enough for a committed exchange on both parties.
Hmm.
No, it's going to totally depend. Like, I have a lot of different price points in my business structure. I have some that, you know, I have a yogi detox is $175, and yoga health coaching for someone who hasn't been through Living Ayurveda course is around $7,500. So those commitments, like if someone's putting a $175 commitment towards me, they're going to get about that back from me. I mean, it's an interesting thing, like in terms of how involved I am in their success, how personally involved I am. It doesn't mean that it's actually kind of amazing what people get for the $175 in the yogi detox and the amount of support they do get through other means than personal one-on-one time with me.
Right.
They get a ton through a community movement. They get a ton through, you know, things that are more like downloadable videos, audios, guidance. They get to be part of a shift, like a conscious shift in culture, which is so cool for people who are really into yoga and Ayurveda, and they're like part of something that's living, changing, growing, morphing, and knows that it's doing that. That course is going into its, let's see, 12th year.
Wow.
So it's kind of amazing. And there's people that have been around for a really long time, and we know what we're doing. And this whole next one is all conversations with Agni. It's all about like our conversations with our digestive fire, and really looking at that as yogis and healers and yoga students and teachers, and just like really looking at like what's this next level of understanding ourselves as the transformative capacity. What's that conversation like within ourselves, you know? And then at a more physical level, what's that conversation like in terms of digestion? So, you know, a lot of what I provide is a conversation. It's like it's a dialogue that becomes the person's personal dialogue. It becomes part of what they're able to then talk to in the communities that I form around that dialogue. Now, I know for a lot of, you know, I sense where your question goes for a lot of healers and practitioners who aren't as online and creating dialogues and communities as my business might be, is that it's like how much are you in charge of how much they change? And in my business coaching with teachers and healers, it's having a price point and a sales process that's very much pre-qualification oriented, so that before you come under, you know, terms of engagement, right, that it's like you kind of are already, you're already a perfect fit.
Hmm.
You've already established that. And you're already doing it at a price point where both of you know exactly how committed you are. And the structure is really clearly laid out. And the assumptions are really clearly laid out. And if that assumption is there's X amount of work a week and you're going to have to do this amount of time and this amount of practices to work with me, then I tell you, it's going to make it a lot easier, because either the person's going to do it or they're not. And if they're not doing it, they're not meeting the terms of the contract, in which case you can terminate the contract.
Hmm.
But if they are, then they can actually get to where you say you can bring them, right? Whether that's out of pain or whether that's the weight loss or whether that's the you know, transformational breakthrough of whatever definition that you've established.
How much, like, is it your responsibility? Like, I love that. Like, they're making a level of commitment that determines, like, if you're making this large commitment, you should do it. But even if still, if they don't do the work, is it your responsibility to motivate them, or are you just kind of figuring out a way of giving them the space to figure it out for themselves?
That's all in the contract. Do you know what I mean? Like, in the yogi detox, I don't actually tell them what they should expect like I do in other courses.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
You know, so it's like whatever's built into the terms of the contract. In Living Ayurveda course, it's 3 to 5 hours of work a week that they're going to have to put into the course to make it actually for them to succeed. If they don't put the time in, they cannot expect the result. There's just no way around that. It just takes time. It takes an amount of time to involve in the dialogue for them to get the result, for their beliefs to shift, their assumptions to shift, their sacred anatomy to start to open up. That's all. It all takes time. It's accelerated. The time's accelerated because we're in community, for sure. So it's actually not that much time. 3 hours a week is not a lot of time.
Right.
So, you know, let's just take more of a typical package where someone does body work and they have 10 sessions and, you know, they're giving diet and lifestyle recommendations along with the 10 sessions of body work, and the client's not following the diet and lifestyle stuff, and they're staying up late and they're drinking too much alcohol and they're doing this and that and doing that. Like, how much of that is the practitioner's responsibility? It's like, it's none. And we should be, I think, very clear. If more clear practitioners are with setting up these contracts and setting up the expectations and selling things in packages over time and raising price points, or, you know, selling transformational journeys over time and raising price points, the better clients we have and the more clear it is when we need to fire a client. And we might very well need to fire clients or patients or students because they aren't able to work at the level of transformation that we're the most interested in working at. And if that's happening, you're not fulfilling your dharma, which means that as a practitioner, We're going to feel a sense of inadequacy, a sense of frustration, a sense of energetic inefficiency in our own lives. It might be depressing. It might be exhausting. We might feel like we're, quote unquote, picking up the energy of our clients. All that stuff will start to happen because there's this other thing. There's a whole business structure that's not actually set up for success, for our own personal career success in terms of impact and income, but also it's not set up for the success of our clients to have the kind of transformation that we are so skillful in delivering, because
right.
We just haven't set up the contract to do that. We don't have a structure in place.
It's going to take me a while to wrap my head around the idea of firing your clients. It's an amazing concept in and of itself.
I've done it a lot, and it's very powerful. That's a very powerful thing.
That's great.
I've hired clients that I was getting more than $40,000 a year from, you guys.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not saying this casually. Like, I understand. I've really gone through an agni. I've gone through fire with this. It's a tapas. It's very much a tapas of yoga, of business. It's a very fiery practice that allows us to step into Dharma at other levels that otherwise you'll never do, because you're just going to be
right.
working with people who aren't really interested in changing.
That's great. What kind of healers do you go to? Have you sought out in your life?
Well, that's an interesting question. Let's see. In Mexico, there's this great guy who does Janzu, which is a water therapy. Have you ever experienced that? It's kind of like Watsu, but it's very active. So you put on these nose plugs and these goggles, and you go to either a warm spring or a warm pool, and you get moved. It's a practice that this guy from India, what's that cool town south of Chennai, where everybody's from, where everybody in yoga world is from. There's that cool little town. Anyways, this guy came from there, moved to Mexico City, taught his wife this method as well. Like, she was fully rehearsing it. He died. She goes on to then start, like, training people in it. So there's a lot of these cool Mexican healers that are trained in this. Much more, like, it comes out of Mexico now, even though it's a Indian yogic thing. And in this, it's the coolest thing. He is moving my body. So I'm like limp like a fish. And he's just moving, and I'm just moving my body. And you inhale when your mouth, it's all mouth breathing because you have nose plugs on so you don't get water up your nose.
Right.
So you mouth breathe when you can, which is like you hold your breath a lot. The more experienced you are, I mean, it's all
right.
levels, right? But I've got a deeper breath. Anyways, and just moving in the spine starts to unravel. It is you, and it's just this pulsation, like, because your whole spine becomes a wave. It just, I mean, it is already a wave, but because we're so in the, you know, if we speak Ayurvedic speak, like, we're, you know, it's because we're land creatures. We live in air and we live on earth. So we have, our bodies are very influenced by air earth element, even though our spine is much more like a wave. It's much more ether water, right? So this returns the ether water into the spine, and it starts to just pulsate and move. It's so amazing that, like, afterwards I feel like it's like one of those things that after an hour and a half therapy for the next, like, 2-3 days, my whole spine is still just like in this amazing wave, like, pulsation. That's one of my new favorite therapies.
So as an Ayurvedic practitioner, where does allopathic medicine fit in with what you do?
Well, I mean, I think one of the beauties of Ayurveda is it's like it really comes down to the science of life. And it has, I think, within the assumptions, and you could say because it's changed so much over time, it's not a static system that was, you know, revelated 5,000 years ago and then, you know, like, written into tablets and then never changed. Ayurveda is constantly changing. If we get that everything's constantly changing, I think it helps us, like, look at the intermingling of systems. Ayurveda has had, especially if we look at, you know, Tantra comes in about, you know, 900 AD. If we look at some of Tantra coming a lot from the place of alchemy in Ayurveda, of like alchemists, like people basically trying to alchemize the physiology, a lot of playing with heavy metals to see, you know, how does mercury become an elixir? You know, some things that are, how does a toxin become an elixir? And this is a lot of where Ayurveda was before some of the, you know, Tantra moves through yoga. When we get Tantra moves through yoga, and it's like the separation of just, you know, more dualistic forms of enlightenment, that gets cracked open like an egg, and it's like, whoa, okay, anything's game, right? Like anything's possible, anything's game. You know, the world is your oyster, invent it. And that when we look at Ayurveda from that perspective of really getting that, if we get that some parts of Ayurveda really get that, then allopathy, if you will, just fits in. Everything fits in. It's a container that holds everything. So say, for instance, you're in a car accident. So if we can, like, just look for a practical way to apply this. Say you're in a car accident. What are the best modalities to heal, right? Well, if we have the five bodies assumption, we're going to look at the physical body and be like, okay, there's all these broken bones. What are the best ways to stabilize these bones? Well, we have these new, really cool, you know, like different stabilizing plasters that may even have, like, who knows what's in there, polymers and titanium and, right, like, who knows what's in there, right? So we're using technology, right? In Western medicine, allopathy uses such a great use of technology. So we use that technology to create stabilization. Great. Now, what are we going to do for the other four bodies? Right? So then that's where Ayurveda is like, okay, great. What else can we pull from? Like, what else is happening? What else do we know of? And we start to, you know, whether that's some deep breathing practices, whether the rest of the body, the parts where the skin hasn't been broken, that where the bones are stable underneath, that we can actually get hands on skin and start to pacify the nervous system through the skin, through healing touch. You know, maybe we can create a force field of love and intention around the person. Maybe we can do aphorisms or mahavakyas, great statements that hold a larger intention that help to organize the mental patterns, the vrittis around something that's positive to anchor the more subtle levels of mind-body into a higher orbit of consciousness that will then actually influence the physical body, you know, and et cetera, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. I love that. So just finishing up, what do you think are, like, you know, a little piece of advice, but like the most important first steps for someone to take who's interested in getting on the road to being their own healer?
Well, I would say if they're listening to this interview and all the other ones you've done, like, you're on the
right
way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, and just not kidding, like every day when we wake up, like, right? Who are you going to be today? How aligned are you going to be? How big's your dharma? How big's your impact? Like, how great can you be? And then you've got five bodies, or you've got a few of them anyways. Like, you know, deal with your physical body. Deal with your spiritual body. Deal with your mental, emotional body. Like, get real practices in place. Even if it's a 20-minute practice that takes care of all four for you, like, or all five for you, like, get real. I mean, that's really my, like, wake up and get real. And anything that pulls you into less consciousness, if you know, like, staying up late and watching TV the night before, then you don't have time the next day, then when you're watching TV tonight, do it consciously and realize that you're shooting yourself in the foot for the next day and that you're giving yourself more pain, whether it's psychic or whether it's emotional or whether it's physical. And just get real with yourself that you're making bad choices. And then start hanging out with people who are making better choices. Until we get that we need to change the people that we hang out with, if we're having trouble, you need to hang out with more, basically more enlightened, more connected, healthier people. And so that might not mean, like, not hanging out at the bar and starting to hang out at the yoga studio. Like, making those choices consciously and just being like, you know what? I got to start hanging. If you don't have the wherewithal to, like, put yourself to bed early and get up early and move your body and your breath, then start out hanging out with people who do. Because maybe you can make that choice of, like, okay, at least I'm going to start to change that. Or maybe you don't even do that. Maybe instead of, when you read New York Times online, you start to read the health and wellness section instead of opening it to the financial review. Maybe that's your baby step. It's starting to get that you got to bring healthy stuff in through these different places, whether it's through the mind, whether it's through your community, or whether it's through your personal practices, until you're starting to do that all the time with everything, and you start to hang out in a totally different conversation.
Thank you so much, Kate. It was really a pleasure talking to you, learning more about what you do and your perspective on this healing stuff. For more info on Kate Stillman, check out her websites, yogahealer.com and yogidetox.com. This is Jonathan Fitzgordon of corewalking.com and the host of the Be Your Own Healer Telesummit, wishing you a great day. And thanks again, Kate.
Oh, my pleasure, Jonathan. It was a blast talking with you.
Be well.